Back in on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Hour number two of the program. We're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Shouts to Justin and East Van for showing us what that sounded like in 1.5 speed from yesterday's show.
Yeah.
It was very fast.
Yeah, somebody also messaged earlier and said, I listened to you guys at half speed at the end of Overrated Underrated, and you guys sounded worse than Josh.
Not surprised. Let's bring in our next guest. It's Landon Ferraro, joins us every Thursday here on Canucks Central. What's happening, Landon?
Not too much. Sounds like you guys are solving the world's problems here.
trying to. One nonsensical comment at a time.
Perfect.
My first question for you today is, why is the preseason so long?
I have no idea. Like, the way I look at it is like the first half of preseason is for all the draft picks and like the guys that are just kind of starting their pro career. It's like their chance to get into a jersey and have that experience. And then they all get sent home, and then you have the 2-3 games left of actual preseason hockey.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's been a lot of discussion now about shortening the preseason, but it's not going to happen unless they lengthen the regular season. And it just seems like there's no way to reduce the amount of hockey we're getting. It's all about the revenues at the end of the day. And that's why it's kind of pick your poison, isn't it? Do you want a longer regular season, or do you want to be able to rest guys through a long preseason?
I mean, at this point, like you said, like they're not going to take games away. So Just take two away from the preseason, chuck them onto the regular season. The guys will be more than happy to get going. They're playing the game anyway. They'd rather, like, at least personally, whenever I played preseason, it was just get through the game, feel good about yourself, but like just don't get hurt. Like just get yourself to the year. You're just trying to feel good. So if I could just start earlier and play the two games and they mean something, I mean, everyone's going to be more happy about that.
Are you surprised with the amount of, like, big hits and emotional moments we've seen across the preseason? Part of me is like, yes. I mean, why are guys going this hard? But at the same time, I mean, you get onto the ice, you get into that competitive spirit, it's almost hard to turn that sort of gear off.
Yeah, and I think, like, I've been thinking about it, like all of us have, you know, in the past little bit here, as more guys have gone down in preseason. And you know, think what you guys think about this, but in my head, like, it kind of makes sense. You know, go back 10 years or so, like, young guys weren't making teams out of camp unless they were an absolute phenom. And now, like, on good teams, you need to have a couple good, really good young players if you're going to be past kind of that middle ground in the NHL. So you have more players that have something at stake. Is the way that I've kind of fallen on it here is it's the only way it makes sense to me, because you're right, like, guys are going so much harder, there's so many more big hits. Like, I feel like before it was, you know, the best guys, like, each team would always dress like two full lines of, you know, their NHL talent and then two of American League and under, and like they kept the lines going against each other, so it was kind of even through. Now it's all mixed together and you have guys playing at different paces.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, because you always hear about players talk about if you're trying to play to not get hurt in the regular season, you end up getting hurt, and that's kind of what's happening right now, isn't it?
For sure. You have, like, when you're playing not to get hurt, you think about every movement you make, and because of that, you don't just naturally do anything, and you're bracing for things where you normally wouldn't. Like, sometimes when you get hit hard, it's almost better when you don't know what's coming, because you don't brace for it. It almost just blows right through you. When you can see it at that last second and you brace for everything, like, that's where you can sometimes run into problems of, you know, your shoulder popping or just, you know, hitting ribs into boards, things like that. Like, you have different ways at it, and it's, you need to be able to just play, because when you're natural and you feel you're not thinking about it, your body just goes to places where it should. You're not thinking about anything.
You know, as a team, the Canucks, they'll use tomorrow night as a dress rehearsal, but they haven't really put a full or anything close to a full roster together for any of the games that they've played so far. in the preseason. You know, when it comes to that, you're trying to implement a few new tweaks to the system, add a couple of wrinkles to your game. Do you need the game action to really put that in, or do those things happen in practice?
To get it to the point where the coaching staff and the players are going to be really happy with it, you definitely need game time. You can get a lot of that done in practice and through your training camp. Like, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is the best players in the world. They're going to pick up on what you're telling them pretty quickly. But at the end of the day, it's the same as summer training. Like, you feel amazing in summer training and skating, and then you get the first day of camp and you're doing real drills, and all of a sudden you don't really have that same wind. Like, it takes a little bit. So, you know, we can say that, you know, they haven't had a full roster in yet, and it's, you know, it's okay. Like, you know, it's better to make sure guys are feeling, you know, 100% and things like that. But at the end of the day, you also want your lineup in there for at least a couple games if everything played out perfectly, just to get that cohesiveness again and see everyone in one group. It is an important detail.
Well, I feel like a lot of that, for as much as, you know, preseason is about getting reps in, it almost feels like this preseason for the Canucks and for a lot of other teams is about evaluating young talent. And then October is kind of when you really start to hone in, because October always seems to be like a higher scoring month during the course of the NHL season. The play's a little bit sloppier, more mistakes are being made, things are a little bit more, you know, they're not in place. The systems aren't running as a well-oiled machine, even for some of the better teams across the league. It feels like a lot of this does start to happen through the first month of October. And not that the coaches are saying like, hey, we just need to, you know, be 500 or a couple games above through the first month, and then we'll really start to make our hay later on in the season. But it feels like that's, you kind of just, you want to manage the early start of the season. And part of that is getting your sort of your new wrinkles in place during the first month of the year.
Yeah. And, you know, there's kind of two ways that everyone ends up looking at it, and it's one way at the beginning of the year and one way at the end of the year. Yes, you use the, you know, October, the first month of the season, is, you know, you're kind of trial by fire as you're trying to get everything organized and move along. And the biggest thing, like you said, is just, well, not being the Edmonton Oilers of last year and coming out, I think, what was it, 2-9 and something?
2-8-2, yeah.
Yeah, 2-8-2, right? Like, you don't want to have to be fighting your way back from that. As long as you can survive and you're improving through the month, then things are all right. But you always, it goes back to what you always hear of, you know, at the beginning of the year, it's, you know, we're figuring it out. It was a good effort tonight, but, you know, the game slipped away. You know, we'll learn from it and move on. And then you get to the end of the season and every point matters so much. And I remember talking to you guys about it before the playoffs started last year. And, like, every point you can bank in October, November is only helping you at the end of the year, where you don't have to get into such a panic. If you can bank 5 or 6 more points early in the year, it might save you, and you can rest a guy or two at the end of the season. So it's, yes, it's not the biggest rush, but you definitely want to get to your pace and start taking advantage of teams that haven't figured it out yet at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, what we're looking for the Canucks. So at least have a solid start. Maybe you don't need to be as hot as last year to prove to everybody that you're for real. But, you know, definitely don't be under 500 the first 10, 20 games of the season. As far as some of those young guys on the team fighting for roster spots, we've seen some demotions. We've seen some roster maneuvering a little bit to give an indication, but we're not quite sure yet who's really going to play game one and if Ratu or Baines or one of these guys is here to stay. But as far as what you've seen from a guy like Ratu, do you think he's shown enough that you feel comfortable if he does start the season here?
I mean, he's definitely shown enough that he's earned that chance for sure. Now, whether that works with just how all the rosters trying to get put together and, you know, are guys coming back or not, but he's definitely played himself into that spot for sure. You know, I don't think there's really been too many times through preseason here where he's on the ice and you kind of have that, you know, little inhale of you see a mistake coming or you see him just about to move out of, like, he's in the right positions. He's playing hard. He's generating chances. You know, he's earned the right to be there. It's just whether time-wise it works out. Like, there's, you look at camps all over the place, and, you know, there's a player almost in every camp that has done enough to be there, and it's just whether it's their roster time that it's going to work or not.
Yeah, and I think the difference or part of the salary cap era and the way so many of the top teams are like right up against the cap, it just sometimes it just comes down to the dollars and cents of it, less so than merit. It's not like pre-salary cap days where you could make a team on merit, because sometimes it comes down to what matters on the salary cap. And, you know, for the way Rick Tocchet has discussed things the last couple of days, he's given praise for Baines and Ratu, who are still on the roster right now. And but he's also said, like, there's still some things that they need to work on, still some things that have to grow in their game, little things and details. And he keeps putting that point at the forefront. And he talks about a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe, and it's like, you know, he does a lot of things well for us. He's a big part of our team, still in the mix, even though he went down to Abbotsford. And one thing we've always seen NHL coaches rely on is sort of veterans that are good pros, good guys in the room, and guys that they can trust in even fourth line, you know, playing 10, 11 minutes a night. And there's always, it seems like, a hesitancy to trust in that young player for head coaches, or at least that's the way my view of it has been for so many years. What is it about that veteran guy that a coach can appreciate and can trust more than somebody like an Arshdeep Baines or Atu Ratu?
Just peace of mind. You have a bigger body of work to know that you know the player, and it's one less thing for Tocchet to think about as he's putting someone over, or he's looking at a lineup trying to figure out how it's all going to work. Like, I don't think, you know, I was an assistant coach for the Langley Rivermen of the BCHL last year. You know, that's a very good level of junior. The amount of work us as a coaching staff were doing for the junior level was insane. Now you put that to the NHL level, like, he has a million things going through his head every single day. It's easy to put the thing that you know out, and you know what the result is most likely going to be. It's hard to put the rookie out where, you know, you're thinking, you know, if he has his game tonight, this is what we're going to get. If he doesn't, well, this is what we're going to get, but that's not really going to work. You know, like, there's a lot more questions that go into it, but, you know, it's one of those as well. How's a player going to get that experience until someone gives them that chance? So, you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but, you know, at this time of the year, like, every decision seems so big. But at the end of the day, like you just said, like, DiGiuseppe goes down, well, he could still be here for opening night. Like, things move around. Like, I got sent down in the last cuts in Minnesota my first year, and I still played in the opening night roster because a couple guys got hurt in practice. Like, you just never know what's going to happen.
No, absolutely. As far as some of these veterans looking to carve out bigger roles for themselves in this team, guys like Daniel Sprong, for instance, and it's been really interesting watching Sprong through training camp and the preseason. Initially, he wasn't given the shot right away in training camp and the first couple of preseason games playing with Pettersson and DeBrusk, but he's on that line now, and the coach spoke a lot about his details having to be better. And as far as being able to trust him, now he seems to be at least, you know, maybe getting that shot for the first preseason game. When you're trying to bring a guy like that along who needs to clean up certain parts of his game and you want to build him up and get the best out of him, do you throw him, you know, into the deep end right away where he's playing that top six role? Do you wait for him to kind of earn it and gain the trust a little bit more? Like, how do you go about getting the best out of a player like Daniel Sprong as you're trying to evolve his all-around game?
You know, I think it starts with Tocchet's leadership. You know, going back to your last question too, you know, with Tocchet and dealing with the two young players in Baines and Ratu, and now leading into this, like, he has the communication with them, but he also instantly gains some trust by taking some of the fire away from them. Like, in Sprong's case, if you would have thrown him on the top line and everything right away, like, that's a lot more attention that he's going to receive instantly by all of the media. And when you first get to a team, especially a guy in his case where they really have something specific, you know, on the defensive side that they want to work with him, if they can slowly kind of get him moving through camp like they did, and he just keeps building and building, and now he gets that chance, it's not kind of everything all at once for him. He can kind of work his way into it a bit. Maybe he's a bit more comfortable now. They have a better idea firsthand working with him what he can and can't do in capabilities-wise. So, you know, I think it's good that they gave him a little bit of a break, but I like that he's going to get this chance here. Like, again, that shot is lethal. And if you get him in the right situation and they can work with him, like, that's a player that could be one of the biggest, you know, kind of pick-me-ups for this team this year.
You know, it's the story's been told a few times now where Daniel Sprong chose the Vancouver Canucks because of his conversations with Rick Tocchet. We played a clip earlier in the show of Quinn Hughes talking about how much he really likes working with Tocchet and says he's the greatest coach that he's ever worked with. It seems to be a message we're hearing a lot since Rick Tocchet came into town, and how well-liked he is around the hockey world, how well the players speak of him, and the results we've seen on the ice. I think it all plays a factor. But for you, Landon, I mean, what does make a great coach, and do you see some of those qualities even from afar with Rick Tocchet?
I mean, for me personally, the first thing that I always cared for was accountability. Like, I wanted to know if, you know, when a coach sets a standard, are all of us under this standard, whether we're at the top of the lineup or the bottom? Like, I want to know that everyone's in it together. Obviously, your top end guys are going to get the little leash here and there like they deserve. But, you know, when it comes to just the work rate and all that, like, I care about accountability. But, you know, I think especially as the game's evolved here, coaches that can evolve and adapt. Like, there's so many older school coaches, you know, that are slowly, you know, mostly out of the game now, that they had the way that they did things and that was it. There was no discussion about it. There was no changing of anything, right? And now you have coaches that, yes, you know, I heard Quinn talking as well, saying, you know, you can go in and talk to him about anything. But not only that, like, you see those little clips of the, you know, pre-camp of Tocchet working with his coaches and they're all doing a presentation on a different part of the game. Like, that's a group that's eager to learn. And as you're sitting there working your butt off all summer training for the next season, like, you want to know, and you're seeing that your coaching staff is putting in just as much work. They're trying to find that tiny little bit of an edge. Like, you care, at the end of the day, like, all I care about and all the guys care about is you have a coach that's fully in it with you, not above you, really, is how I would say it.
Yeah, and Tocchet definitely gives that vibe. I mean, you broke into the league. Mike Babcock was with the Red Wings at that time. He was considered the greatest coach or the best coach in the National Hockey League. When in Boston, you played for Claude Julien. You played for some of the top coaches of their time. And I would imagine, like, they have different ways about doing things, but maybe similar principles to a certain extent.
Yeah, but, like, I would still... And, you know, I've definitely learned lots from both of them, but at the same time, like, I wasn't in either one of their offices once for a meeting, either of the years that I was there, right? Like, it's a very different coaching style.
Yeah,
they would talk to you very quickly and kind of move on. And then as I got a bit older, and obviously that plays a part in it too, you're not avoiding the coach because you're nervous to talk to him here and there, but you know, you start getting around guys that are, you know, of the newer age a little bit, and before you know it, you're in a 10-minute conversation getting a coffee in the morning when you first walk in, and it's not about hockey, it's about your family and things like that. Like, it's you know, just like the rest of the world, it's things have changed, and people are starting to actually realize that, you know, when you know that someone cares about you, you're going to give a little more, whether you mean to or not.
Well, and I think a big part of it, like you mentioned, is somebody who's invested. And we know every single NHL coach and NHL player is invested, but I'm sure there are different levels of passion for the game, I'm sure. And one thing you hear about Tocchet is how passionate he is about the game. And we were talking about our own experiences. If we get a chance to speak to Tocchet, whether it's on or off air, you can talk hockey with that guy for hours. And he won't pull himself aside. Like, he's one of those guys, he's so engaged in talking hockey all the time. So you kind of need that level of almost a sicko passion, don't you? Like, that's kind of what you see from some of the best coaches, where they're just so fully invested not only in their players and their lives and making sure they're good, but also just finding an edge and thinking about the game all the time.
1,000%. Like, there's no way to do that job, honestly, at like the major junior level, college level above, that you're not absolutely obsessed with that job and want to continue to learn and all of it. Like, the amount of times that you'll be talking to someone that's a coach, or, you know, grabbing a coffee, whatever the circumstances, and you start talking to them, and then before you know it, they're using the napkin and a pen that they had, or whatever's around them, showing some new breakout that they've kind of looked at or been tinkering around with. Like, they obsess about it, and you can see the joy that it brings them. And, like, that's the type of energy that you need to be successful as a coach in the NHL, because, you know, anytime that you back your foot off that gas a little bit, like, you're losing competitive edge all over the place.
Landon, we always appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, our Thursday Canucks analyst here on Canucks Central. A lot of good insights on what makes a great coach, and see a lot of those traits in Rick Tocchet. I mean, it's pretty obvious with the way things have gone, but, you know, it seems like everything Tocchet touches has turned to gold so far. He is like prime Akon at the start of the 2000s.
Are we setting the bar a little high here right now? I mean, prime Akon's a good reference, but in terms of, like, Rick Tocchet, you know?
Well, prime Akon, everything went platinum with prime Akon.
It did.
I should say.
And then disappeared.
Yeah, so you are setting the bar too high.
It's like everything, and then this year they take a sideways step or something, and everything changes.
Maybe we are setting the bar too high, but, I mean, like, shouldn't the bar be high?
Yeah.
If you're trying to be a Stanley Cup contender.
100%. He won the Adams. Yeah.
He won the Jack Adams.
But, I mean, he will have some challenges. Like, everything he touches isn't always going to turn to gold. Like, there will be things that we will question, and coaches make mistakes. And we always love to give a lot of credit to a coach when things go well, and then he's also the guy who takes a lot of the blame when things go poorly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it goes a bit too far on either side. So that's one thing I would just caution myself, even when we're sitting here and talking about Tocchet, so to speak, right?
Well, and I guess the thing I would say about that is, you know, the final third of the season started going the way that it did, and they weren't able to unlock any kind of rush offense in the playoffs against Nashville or even against Edmonton. For as much as Tocchet continued to say, like, I'm trying to get the guys to do it, but we're lacking that execution on the ice. At the end of the day, like, you know, that's something that's going to end up falling on the coach to be able to get the execution on the ice.
That's for sure true. And I think the other part of it, and I think we saw it in terms of the types of players they went after on the roster, especially on the wings, did they even have guys to play a high-end rush style with anyways? Like, how often did we watch that team last year in the playoffs and say, man, they really lack pop on the wings?
Yeah.
Like, they really lack somebody with a little bit of space. Like, there's like, yeah, there could have been a lane here, but the guy can't get through it quick enough. You know, he's not hitting that gap fast. And when that doesn't happen, the difference between a rush chance isn't having an extra second or two. It's literally half a second.
Well, there's a lot of similarities between the guys that they brought in.
Yeah.
In the offseason, there's a speed element there.
More straight ahead with how they play.
Direct play. All have good shots, you know, that they can, you know, score with the few chances that they do get. At least that is part of the theory, as, you know, they all through their careers have pretty good shooting percentages. So, you know, there's definitely an element of, did they have the players to execute that? Now they're trying to with some of the new players that they have in place. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Close out the show. It is Canucks Central. Final segment coming next on Sportsnet 650.
Talking all Canucks, all the time. It's Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on Canucks Central, it's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks preseason coverage brought to you by Tiletown, as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season. Receive 20% off any regularly priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. Man, usually I don't like having players in the Thursday nighter, but my fantasy team in the Sportsnet 650 league has both Drake London and Mike Evans, and they just scored first quarter touchdowns. So I'm feeling pretty good right now.
You feel pretty good? All right, yeah. That's good. That's solid. I have Kyle Pitts on one of my teams.
And he's got a catch, so that's already...
Yeah, I saw him actually huge. Do something today.
So he got a reception.
Like a 30-yard catch. Yeah. So it's like, that makes him T5 this week.
I got the notification on the Sleeper app and had to do a double take.
Who?
What? He actually caught a pass? I mean, to be fair, it was the first game in his career to go without... catching a pass, like 48 games. So it's not like he always does this.
And he was all right in, I think, week two or something like that. I mean, realistically, the tight end landscape in football it's pretty grim these days.
Yeah. Yeah. It looked good like a couple years ago that it might grow. And then, you know.
Somebody asked me the other day, should I drop Mark Andrews in my league? And I'm like, who are you going to pick up?
Isaiah
I know
Likely?
Mark Andrews sucks, but like.
Well, Isaiah Likely. Like, well, I mean,
he's been bad too.
Well, I mean, yeah, he had the first good, the week one was that he went off. Yeah. He had a couple, you know, touchdowns or whatever. And then after that, not great.
Tight ends just not great in football these days.
Hawkinson coming back soon, though.
He is, yeah. Mm. I have him on one of my teams. I got him to stash them, and hopefully he gets that. That's how bad the tight ends are. Like, I drafted, I in an auction league, bought an injured tight end.
All right, that's enough fantasy football talk.
Well, you guys talked onions before. Now you're talking fantasy football?
Before we lose all of our listenership.
Yeah, there's somebody that was like texting us.
Somebody
like,
was very upset.
And like, even when we had stopped, like, I mean, it was a people show bit. We spoke about it the first, like, what, 3-4 minutes of our show because it was, the stench was just
the
unbearable.
The stench of onions was pretty rancid here in the studio.
Yeah, like my eyes were watering, you know, like when you're cutting onions, that's kind of how it felt. So I was very upset.
Are you over it now?
Nah, not really. But I made sure everybody knew how upset I was. No. This was earlier.
We were aware.
I made very clear how I felt about it. But yeah, like 3 minutes in, 4 minutes in, like, can you stop talking onions? And then for the next 10 minutes, kept talking about like, why aren't you talking? Why are you talking onions? And we were already on to like 3 different topics at that point. I'm like, that's like 8 minutes ago, bro. Like, you can stop now. We're talking sports.
I want a play by play of like how your wife responds to you coming home and like giving her a kiss. And
so, I texted her the video because I like didn't give her a heads up or anything, but I texted her the video and she's like, so because of your actions, I now have to deal with onion breath. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes when I get home.
Yeah, you're dealing
not
with
just
that.
Onion breath. You're like ode to onions, you know, like
I have
parfum.
No idea.
No clue. Like on,
how do you feel right now? Do you have like heartburn? You have the achy though? Like how's
my
it going?
Tongue just still tastes like onion, but aside from that, I feel normal.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how you feel tomorrow.
I've had like 7 mints.
Josh is still young. He doesn't get the achy though.
No, not quite yet. Yeah. He's still in his 20s. He makes, you know, dumb decisions people in their 20s make. It'll change.
He doesn't need a bowl of chicken wings and feel it for the next 24 hours.
This is so, like, right on cue. This one says, breaking news, no one cares about your fantasy football league. Zero people. Absolutely no one. Move on. Don't justify your awful choices of content. Move on. Mm. And this person is called D's Nux. So, I mean, you know, a very creative person texting us in about content. So, very smart.
D's Nux. We appreciate your
Got
opinion.
Got him.
You can fill out a survey at sportsnet.com.
You know what? I can say
650.
I know a lot of fans are upset about what's going on with the Vegas Golden Knights, and rightfully so. I mean, here's the golden organization, the golden child of Gary Bettman in the National Hockey League, once again getting away with murder.
So, I like my problem with this. Okay, like I want to believe the NHL that this is a very unique situation for the Vegas Golden Knights. But it is hard to take them at their word, right? Like essentially, if you're just a fan of, you know, basically any contending team, the Vancouver Canucks are having to spend an LTI for years. They had Michael Ferland, they had Tucker Pullman unable to play because of career-ending concussions, right? And these players are just saddled on your salary cap books, and you have to factor them in every single year, right? It's part of the process. The Arizona Coyotes used it to their advantage, acquiring every, you know, career-ended player that had an injury and was still on the books for $7 million so that they wouldn't have to actually spend the salary cap floor. The Montreal Canadiens with Carey Price over $10.5 million. What's stopping them from trying to go the same route as this route that has the Vegas Golden Knights have gone with Robin Lehner? And the problem is we haven't had enough detail as to why Vegas is being given this sort of relief on the salary cap when most other teams aren't getting this type of relief.
And we'll see what the situation is, but it's very clear that Lehner does have an injury.
Yes.
That has led to all this. Now, in terms of his behavior while injured, is that something that can lead to the termination? Obviously, it's not. I don't think it's strong enough for them to undeniably have a case that they would win against the PA, that they were like, hey, we don't even want to pay him. So to me, the fact they're paying him, they're not going into a battle with the PA, tells me that they may have a case, but it's not a strong case necessarily. It's not an open and shut case that, hey, we got this in the bag. Like, I don't think that's the case. So if that's the situation that you're seeing, whatever the reasons were, the fact is that Robin Lehner is injured. He can't perform because of his injury.
Yeah.
And this entire mechanism was put in, guaranteed contracts and LTIR, that you have to deal with it while the player is hurt. And these are the consequences. You live with the consequences.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, because a player, whatever the behavior may or may not be, while he's injured and can't play hockey, you're getting an exception.
Yeah.
And then you look back at, again, and I know some people roll their eyes because we keep bringing up the long over cap or capture, but it's a perfect example of how arbitrarily the National Hockey League decides to go after things.
Yeah.
And it's really at whatever Gary Bettman wants to do, and Gary Bettman went on a personal crusade because he didn't want those contracts to happen, which were not illegal.
No, he was mad that teams found a loophole in the CBA to sort of, what did they call it, circumvent the cap.
To me, is this not like somewhat cap circumvention too? That, hey, there's something going on with this player. We want to terminate his contract. Maybe not enough to not pay him, but let's get it off the books. That's kind of circumvention. It kind of is, right?
Like, it's truly helping out the Vegas Golden Knights.
It is. Right now, again, there might be more to it. But the fact is, unless Lehner is actually healthy and there are other things, if that's the case, okay, that changes things slightly. But everything we know is that he's injured.
Yeah.
And the reason he's not playing is because of the injury.
The reporting today was that part of the reasoning that they came to this settlement is because there's a feeling that Vegas could go to court, try to terminate the contract, not have to pay him anything and all of that. And instead of doing that, they're deciding we'll just pay Robin Lehner out, but in return, we'd like to have his salary cap charge taken off of our books. And look, the NHL, there's almost like a hierarchy of teams in the NHL, and some teams seem to get away with more than others. And I know I hate the way that sounds, but in reality, like, Vegas has been able to do this ever since they've come into the league. The way that they, circumvent the cap with LTIR, but like essentially circumvent the cap.
I have
exploiting a rule.
Okay, so Jordan Langley says almost everyone at your station defends the Tampa Vegas stuff. If you defend that, please stop calling this action out. It's completely different. Getting a contract terminated and getting it removed off your books and utilizing LTIR are two completely different things. The reason I defend using LTIR is because it's been allowed ever since it's been put in. The Vancouver Canucks in 2011 utilized LTIR to build the best team they've had. They weren't able to make the Higgins trade and make the Lapierre trade if they did not utilize LTIR. If Sammy Salo hadn't gotten hurt before the season, they would not have been able to keep their entire defense.
Yeah.
They use LTIR more than any team had up until that point, that playoffs. It was like 5-6, whatever it was. It was a percentage of the cap, which would be similar to like $9 million today.
Yeah.
So they utilized LTIR, the Canucks did. So I defend, that's perfectly fine. But getting out of a contract completely, getting out of recapture situations, that's where I have a big issue with, because that's been arbitrarily ruled. The LTIR has been very consistent. You go into LTIR, you maximize your cap space, you can get down for the playoffs. That's been utilized. There's been a complete consistency in how that's gone. This is not consistent. Cap or catcher has not been consistent. The termination of contracts has not been consistent. It's arbitrary. They're completely different things.
Yeah. It is different. There's not a ton of precedence around a situation like this. I think the only one that happened recently was, I'm going to say, Evander Kane with the San Jose Sharks when he, I guess, what was the story that he was alleged to have forged his vaccination or something to that effect? And San Jose got fed up with Evander Kane and they moved to terminate his contract. It's completely off of their books. They did end up having to pay him out a certain extent. They went, you know, Kane filed a grievance and they came to a settlement on how much they were going to pay out his contract. But this situation with Robin Leonard, I mean, the way a fan sees it today, what's stopping, like, if Tucker Pullman just didn't show up for his annual physical at the start of Canucks training camp, do the Canucks just get out of Tucker Pullman's $2.5 million cap charge? Like, is that, can any team do this now? Is that how this is going to work from now on?
Well, and
that's how a fan views it today.
That's how, exactly. It's not that simple, right? And and I know, again, Vegas has reason to terminate and probably goes beyond not showing up to, you know, the physical, whatever.
They knew he wasn't going to show up.
And this person here says, Vegas was getting out of it either way. The PA and the league have decided it's in the best interest that Leonard still gets paid, but conceded it would not impact the cap. But you're still paying the guy money.
Yeah.
So if it's such a if it's such an open and shut case and your case was so good, you're just fine forking over the money?
Yeah.
It's still like $5 million or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I don't understand here. So and I get it. You may have reason for termination. But is your case that strong that you're still paying out the money? Mm. Like if you felt that strong about your
Bill
case.
Bill Foley might be like so invested in having a good hockey team that he cost of doing business for him. Because it's going to help Vegas be able to add a piece at some point during the season.
I get it, but you're still paying out the money. Yeah. That to me, the thing, you're still like, if this is so wrong, the issue is the money here, right? Yeah. When the core of the issue is like the money that you're paying guys, right? Yeah. So he's still getting paid. Yeah. So how's it not on the books?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're paying the money.
Yeah. You're paying the money.
It's arbitrary. You're completely removing something out of the salary cap. You're talking about HRR. Like, you're completely moving something out of the salary cap.
But it's not. Frank Saravalli, he didn't have confirmation on this, but in his write-up at Daily Faceoff, mentioned that Leonard's salary is still going to count towards the 50-50 for players and owners. Like, it's still going to count towards.
But it also skews now because it counts, but now there's more cap space or money to use.
That's what I mean.
So that still messes the numbers up.
Yes. So if it's still going to count in that sense, but not on Vegas's books, again, it's all just very convenient for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, it's all the arbitrary nature of all of it is what gets me.
Yeah. I mean, you see it in the NHL in some cases. I think MLS, you know, those that are Whitecaps fans or followers of MLS have long complained that the salary cap exists for some teams but not for others.
Yeah.
Like for Inter Miami and, you know, their ex-Barcelona superstars that they've put together. It's like, hey, does the salary cap really exist for these guys? Well, they found a way around it.
Yeah, they figured it out.
But that's... tough one for the NHL today because it's pretty apparent that most fans aren't happy with the way that this played out, and also the lack of transparency on Leonard's situation and why Vegas has been able to get out of having this count against their salary cap makes it that much muddier of a situation. All right, keep it on with some of the thoughts in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Vegas is getting away with fraud, not murder. Colin from the Caribou.
I mean, I guess that's technically yes. Well, I mean, if you want to call it fraud. Okay, somebody was asking about Swayman. Do you think they go after Swayman?
It was the Vegas Golden Knights?
Yeah. Minor Matt Abbasford was asking about that.
I don't see why they would.
They go after every star player on the market, though.
This, like
Is he on the market, though?
The thing about, you know, Vegas, like, this helps them for their salary cap to start the season, and it helps them accrue salary cap space because they won't have to start the season in LTIR with Leonard coming off of their books.
How convenient.
But, yeah, you're not going to be able to add an $8 million salary to their books unless they move somebody significant off of their books. I guess maybe Aiden Hill would go back the other way to level up the salaries a little bit. He's at $4.9 million.
I mean, they might not need one of their defensemen since they brought in Hanifin, extended him.
Yep. There's that possibility as well.
Yeah, I mean, they have just over $1 million in cap space because they're going to demote somebody. So they'll have just about $1 million in space, actual cap space. And if they let that grow, they can be in a really strong position. Again, like Vegas is a team that I don't think people pay enough attention to.
Yeah.
That's going to be really good this upcoming season. Now, I don't think they're necessarily better than Vancouver. I think they're in the same tier as Vancouver. But in terms of having a successful regular season.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I see for them.
I wonder, like, how much are they going to miss Jonathan Marchessault? End of the day. Like, I think, you know, Thomas Hertl replaces a lot of what Chandler Stephenson brought anyways and probably does it better. But do they have enough talent on the wings now to support their centerman? Because, yes, you have Eichel, Hertl, and Bill Carlson through the middle of the ice. That's about as good a 1-2-3 as you'll see in the league. But, you know, Pavel Dorofeev and some of these guys that are going to be playing big-time wing spots, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Jeremy Swayman, did you see this quote from Swayman that's part of the Amazon Face-Off docuseries talking about his arbitration thing? He's clearly in the whole negotiation that they're going through right now with Jeremy Swayman, he has clearly not forgotten anything that happened in the arbitration.
For sure. Now, I saw, you mentioned Frank Saravalli, I saw Frank reply to somebody and say context that it was player elected salary arbitration.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the team took him to arbitration and went after him. And then people got mad at Frank, but well, that doesn't mean they should say what they want. It's like, that's the nature of arbitration. You know, yeah. Like you're going to say certain things because it's about your case. Like you're doing a legal argument, right? Yes. Nothing you can do with
why we should pay this guy less, and yeah. And the player argues why I should be paid more.
Exactly, you're making a strong argument, and with that argument, sometimes you can point to some pretty sensitive things and make certain statements about a player, right? I think you can do it with nuance, and I think you do it with tact and not piss a player off. And I'm not sure exactly what was said by the Bruins, but there's a level of. You decided to go to arbitration. You use your power to go to arbitration.
Yes.
And these things kind of happen in arbitration.
Yes.
Now, you can use whatever you want for fuel. I'm just not necessarily sure I feel sorry for Jeremy Swayman because he had a tough arbitration hearing.
Yeah. Every player is going to have a hard time hearing, where their weaknesses are.
Yeah. And listen, some athletes, they use this, like Jordan, others, right? They use any perceived slight even to fuel their competitiveness. And that's fine. Like, you do what you need to do to be the best player you need to be. I'm just not feeling like, the Boston Bruins are so evil because they were arguing in their, on their behalf in arbitration. That's kind of what arbitration is all about.
At the end of the day, they're offering you $60+ million. I don't think they hate you that much, Jeremy.
Yeah.
That's all I'm here to say.
Yeah, no, and I will say this. Like, I have no problems with him holding out. I have no problems with him trying to get as much as he can. And you know what? Power to him for fighting to get what he thinks he deserves. Because I don't think he's being unreasonable in the numbers he's asking for. If it's 8.5, 9 even, given what he's done and you look at other goalies and where salaries are going, I think it's completely fine. But this whole negotiation stuff, I find some of it to... everyone's going to have to have a little tougher skin. That goes for the Bruins. We got all pissy and Cam Neely had to go to the media and say what he needed to say. Like,
just accept it. You're a Bruin. You accept less. Doesn't always work that way, Cam. All right. Tomorrow, we're back. Mailbag Friday. Do we have Yannick yet?
Yannick is back.
Yannick is back. Yannick Hansen, his first hit for the season, as he'll join us coming up. Tomorrow, we close out the week. We're on 4-6, and then a Canucks Central pregame show leading into the preseason finale against the Edmonton Oilers at 6 o'clock. Puck drop from Rogers Arena at 7. Of course, you can watch it on Sportsnet. Hear the game on Sportsnet 660. 50. For producers Josh, the Onion Eater, and Zach, my co-host Sat, I'm Dan. You've been listening to Canuck Central.